Green Bay.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Democratic congressional leaders say that President Trump's agreed to meet tomorrow ahead of government funding that runs out Tuesday night. The House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries tells ABC's This Week.
We want to find bipartisan common ground to find a spending agreement that avoids a government shutdown and actually meets the needs of the American people.
State and local officials in Portland, Oregon say there's no public safety threat that necessitates deploying soldiers to the city. President Trump said he would send in troops to combat, quote, domestic terrorists. Flash flooding in Arizona responsible for at least three deaths in Globe, about 90 miles east of Phoenix, while the Carolinas are bracing for a possible tropical storm. Tropical depressions expected to strengthen into tropical storm Imelda today. In North Carolina, three people were killed, eight were hurt in a shooting at an outdoor waterfront bar. Authorities say somebody was firing from a boat into the restaurant. One person's been detained. This is ABC News. Russia continues its bombardment of Ukraine. The mayor of Kyiv says a 12-year-old girl was among four people killed in Saturday's strikes against residential areas in the city. Russia's top diplomat issued a warning at the UN General Assembly, says ABC's Chuck Sievertson.
His nation has no intention of attacking Europe, says Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, telling the UN delegates through a translator Saturday.
Any aggression against my country will be met with a decisive response. There should be no doubt about this.
Lavrov accusing NATO and the European Union of telling their citizens that war with Russia is inevitable. This has unauthorized Russian flights into NATO airspace have been going on. And the Danish Defense Ministry says it has seen drones over several defense facilities in Denmark.
Voting machine company Dominion says it settled its $1.3 billion defamation lawsuit against Rudy Giuliani, President Trump's former attorney, over Giuliani's false allegations after the 2020 presidential election. I'm Brian Clark, ABC News.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
You know, I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. As Wisconsin is cheering on the Brew Crew. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
For Civic Media News, I'm Savannah Tomei Olson. It's National Farm Safety and Health Week. Farmers and ag workers are actually in one of the most dangerous industries in America, and it can even be hard on their mental health. Some statistics show the nation loses a farmer a day to suicide. Here's Eric Tegedoff.
The U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics data from 2021 to 2023 found farming, fishing, and forestry occupations had the most injuries per capita of any profession. Cynthia Curl is the director of Boise State University's Curl Agricultural Health Lab. She says there are many dangers in agricultural work that we might associate with other professions like construction, such as the use of heavy machinery.
There are also unique hazards to farm work like pesticides, livestock, different kinds of diseases for people that are working in animal production. And then there's all of those kinds of weather challenges that also face construction workers, like extreme heat.
The National Education Center for Agricultural Safety leads the recognition of National Farm Safety and Health Week in September as the busy fall harvest nears. The theme this year is Safety First, Avoid the Worst. People have drowned in manure ponds of large dairy farms in the winter.
They can ice over or get covered in a little snow and not be obvious where they are. And people have driven machinery seemingly across a field, but actually into a manure pond. That's happened a couple of times in the past decade.
She also points to safety training from organizations like the Pacific Northwest Agricultural Safety and Health Center to help make the industry less dangerous for workers. I'm Eric Tegedoff. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
And this is Civic Media News. I'm Savannah Tomei Olson.
as Wisconsin is hitting the road on your Harley. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A delightful Sunday afternoon shaping up. Sunshine, mid-70s, and a light southwest wind. Tonight, nice and cool with clear skies, lows of the upper 40s. Temperatures starting to warm up a little bit more going into Monday. Sunshine and lower 80s. Currently 49 degrees.
Pete Schwabba. On the next Nightlight, I welcome comedian Mike Lucas and director, producer, and founder of Wisconsinology.com, Frank Anderson. Thank God it's Monday. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8. From Hobart to Bay Settlement, 97.9 WGBW.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Hello and welcome to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm your host, Dr. Kristen Lierley, and today we're taking on a really tough subject, and it might be a hard one to listen to. We're talking about school shootings, specifically the Catholic school shooting in Minneapolis on the morning of August 27th. That day began like any other first week of school at Annunciation Catholic Church and School in Minneapolis, with families gathering for their traditional school opening mass. Kids were excited about the new academic year, and there's that familiar rhythm of faith and community that has defined this Southwest Minneapolis institution for over a century. But at 8:30 that morning, that sense of safety and sanctuary was shattered when a shooter opened fire through the church's stained glass windows, killing two young students and injuring 18 others. For parents like Laura and Patrick, whose three-year-old son thankfully survived this unthinkable tragedy, this experience has not only forever changed their understanding of safety and community, but also deepened their commitment to understanding how such violence can be prevented. As they work through their own family's healing, they're also grappling with the broader questions that communities across America are facing every single day. How do we identify and address the warning signs? How do we balance rights with responsibility? How do we keep our kids safe? And how do we build systems that protect our most vulnerable while addressing the root causes of such devastating violence? There are no easy answers here, but there will be an engaging conversation as we search for them. Laura and Patrick, thank you so much for taking the time to join us and tell your story.
Thanks so much for having us and letting us have a platform to tell it.
Yeah, and you have a lot to talk about. So let's get to it. I mean, I have to imagine that morning was just like any other. You have a three-year-old. Mm-hmm. I remember those mornings. It's chaotic. It's early in the year. You're not into a routine. Probably just a regular morning until it wasn't. What do you remember, Laura?
Yeah, so our son has stayed home with me my whole life. So this was his, he dabbled at some nature preschool in the summer, but this was really technically his third day of school ever. And what I remember is this feeling of like we've made the right choice, because we live quite literally next door to Annunciation and had this amazing experience of getting to walk him there every morning and pick him up. And I had walked him there and then just settled in back home. And I'm also very pregnant. It's now kind of alarming to be like, it's almost been a month, but I'm 8 months pregnant and was excited to have some mornings
of to yourself,
relaxing. Yeah. And had put on my cheesy show and had been sitting in my living room for no more than 15 minutes. I started hearing very suddenly the sound of very rapid, very loud gunfire. And it was right. It felt like it was next door to me. And I knew immediately what it was. I knew it wasn't fireworks. I knew it wasn't roofers. So I ran out into my backyard and I ran and I jumped on top of my backyard patio table to try and get a visual of what was happening, because I could hear that it was like happening there. And I had a very quick realization of like, this is happening at my child's school.
And he's there.
And he is there. And all I know is what I hear. And I could see, I was trying to understand what I was seeing, and I was trying to let my like senses like clock in this like very small amount of time. But what I saw was a person, and I saw what I described as smoke, and later found out that this person had like used some smoke bombs. And then ran into my neighbor's backyard to try and get a better look. My next door neighbor, who's even closer and had this, they weren't at home, and had this realization that I was so close that I was in an unsafe, like I was worried about ricochet. And so I left their backyard and I ran out into the front yard. And at this point, many, if not most of my neighbors are out on their front porch, and they're looking at me like ghosts, and I'm yelling and I'm saying, what do I do? My kid's at that school. And my poor neighbors are like, legitimately like, wait, what? Like, that's what they had not really registered what I had registered.
They didn't understand what was going on there like you did.
Right. They were like, is that roofing? Is that fireworks? What is that? And I, unfortunately, because of the blueprint of America, knew what was happening. I just knew it. And so I started running down the street, because I had this like, well, I can't stay here. Like, I'm not going to sit in my house listening to this for another moment longer and do nothing. And so I went running down my street and around the corner, and around the corner is where the front of the church is. It's right on 54th or Diamond Lake Road. And at this point, the gunfire had stopped, because the gunfire only lasted about 2 minutes. But I didn't know what was happening, and I had people who were telling me, don't go up there. We don't know where the gunman is. Like, don't keep walking. Like, you need to stay here with us. And I ignored them and saw children start filing out of the church, and some were very hurt. And I saw my neighbor, who was escorting a very hurt child out of the church, and ran down. And the church and the school are separate buildings. And the preschoolers don't go to church. They're not welcome, because they're 3, 4, and 5 years old.
Right.
And so I knew he wasn't in there, my son, but I didn't know what was happening. So my one and only thought was, I have to go and set eyes on my child. And I also should say, I called Patrick. Patrick was on the phone with me for almost all of this. So I was calling him, and he's downtown at work, and which is about a 15-minute or so drive away from our house. And I get a hold of him and tell him what's happening, and he's getting in his car and trying to drive as quickly and safely as he can to meet me at school. But he's listening to this like in a secondhand way. And so I finally get into the school, and we're let in by like teachers who were escorting children into the basement gym. And in hindsight, they knew more than I did. I only, again, knew, like, I could tell you what my senses were telling me, that the gunfire had continued to cease, but I didn't know what was happening. Like, I just knew what I had heard.
And you had to get to your baby.
Yeah. And I just had to see, I had to set eyes on my kid. It's like, I have to go look at him. And thankfully this teacher, I don't know if they like recognized me. I found a different preschool parent who was across the street at Starbucks. And I was like, we somehow clocked that we were both preschool parents and we barged into the school. Not really. We were let in because the school was locked. And ran to our child's classroom, which was, again, on the very opposite side of, it's not a huge campus at all, if you've seen a picture of this little tiny church and school, but he was as far away, his little three-year-old room is as far away as he could have been. So I ran down there, and they had no idea what was happening, and they didn't hear gunfire, and they just heard sirens, so me and this other dad ran in and we said, okay, there is an active shooter. We need to lock the doors and barricade the doors and turn off all the lights and, kind of determine where are we sitting in this room. And, you know, it's so early in the school year that it, like the teachers haven't done shooter drills with three-year-olds yet.
Right. And he's 3 days into his school experience
and he looked at me and like I watched his face go from like, I'm excited to see my mom to something is wrong. And like that changed very quickly. And all of the kids also like very quickly picked up that something was wrong. And we tried, I mean, I wasn't like admittedly thinking I better say the exact right thing to these three-year-olds, but we were like, I think I looked at his teacher and said, there's an active shooter. And my kid, I think, was like, what's going on? And I said, there's a bad person outside. And then we huddled these 16 kids into this corner of this room, me and the other dad and the teacher and the teacher's aide. And we sat with these kids for probably less than 10 minutes, like might have been 5 minutes. Time is very hard to like know, like, how long did this go? All in the scheme of things was very short. But we sat there and were holding on to children and waited. And somebody finally called the teacher's phone and was like, hey, do you know what's going on? And then she finally got word that the threat, there was no longer a threat. And we had to escort the kids out of the school. And so we started filing children, three-year-old children, out of their side door, and looking for, started the search for their parents and my husband. And that's kind of what, that's the story.
And Patrick, you're on the phone this whole time. I can't imagine what you were going through as you were listening to all of this, helpless.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I don't know really how to convey the emotional response I had, I was at work, mundane meeting, got a call from Laura, ignored it because I was in a meeting, then got a text that said 911, called her back. And I don't know if you've ever had your spouse call you and tell you that there's actively a shooter at your kid's school, but it's just the most terrifying thing imaginable. I ran out of the office. Everybody was giving me funny looks as I was sprinting out of my, you know, corporate office. Hearts pounding, and got in my car and drove as fast as I could. And I saw the SWAT team pass me as I was driving down the highway.
Wow.
You know, and I'm bawling my eyes out, listening to my wife make these decisions, which, you know, I don't know where the shooter is. I don't know where she is. All I know is that she's entering the school campus and entering the school as this is all transpiring. And I've never been more terrified. And the moment I was able to finally lay eyes on my son, my wife, there was a sense of relief, but also just, you know, a sense of horror.
Hey, I want to come back to this, but we need to take a short break. So when we come back, we'll pick up where we left off and we'll talk about the aftermath of the Annunciation Catholic School shooting and how the community is coming together and healing. And then later in the show, we'll talk about how school shootings have become more commonplace in the U.S. and we'll get Laura and Patrick's thoughts as survivors. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
97.9 WGBW and WGBW.FM.
Lakeland Care is proud to be named one of the top workplaces in Wisconsin for 2025. But what really sets us apart is our commitment to providing personalized support for frail elders and adults with disabilities. Our care teams go above and beyond to help our members live their best lives with dignity and independence. Interested in becoming a member? Visit your local Aging and Disability Resource Center to see if you qualify. To learn more, visit www.lakelandcareinc.com. Lakeland Care. Together, we build better lives.
Hey, it's Amanda, and we all know that Northeast Wisconsin has some of the best events around, but trying to find them all can be tricky. So here at WGBW, we decided to do the work for you. Prevent boredom on any night by going to WGBW.FM and click events in the top right corner. You'll never have to spend forever scrolling to find out what's going on in your area. And if you got an event to share, hit us up by emailing info at WGBW.FM, bringing you local news and timeless hits while giving you the 411 on what's happening in New Wisco.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
You know, I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwaba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Health officials say close to 1,000 people in Wisconsin die by suicide every year. It's Suicide Prevention Month, and if you are struggling, call 988 anytime for support. A message from the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Laura and Patrick, parents whose son attends Annunciation Catholic School, where a school shooting took the lives of two students in August and injured 18 others. Patrick, you were just in the middle of telling your story when we had to go to a break, so I want to pick it back up. You're in a meeting, you get this emergency call from Laura, you ignore it, but then you realize that this is a 911 call and you take off and you're driving down the highway, you see the SWAT team. Take it from there.
Yeah. So I pulled into my neighborhood. The streets were already being blocked off. And so I was able to kind of quickly turn down a separate street and get in the back way to the neighborhood and pull into my driveway. And when I got to my house, I saw all my neighbors outside, all looking horrified, crying. A couple of neighbors in particular told me where Laura had gone. And I ran to the school. There was already probably 5 or 10 parents already outside the school, trying to figure out where their kids were. But because I had been in contact with Laura, I knew that she and the preschoolers had already evacuated out the side of the school and were on one of the side streets. And so I went and I found them and I saw my son and I gave him the biggest squeeze of his entire life, probably. And, you know, I don't think he knew why I was holding him so close, but the next piece was just watching more parents come and look for their children. And you know, some parents found their kids immediately. I was holding the hand of a kid whose dad ran up and snatched him away and picked him up just like I picked up mine. But there were also parents that were looking for their kids in the group of children that were with us, and didn't find their kids and were still searching. And that was just so incredibly heartbreaking to watch, as I had just gone through the same exercise, right? But there was also these really, I don't know if I want to call them touching moments, but of siblings finding each other afterwards, you know, bawling their eyes out, holding each other, grateful to have found each other. And after that, we went home and were absolutely beside ourselves in shock. We had friends come over immediately thereafter just to be with us, hold us, and care for us. Dropped what they were doing, left their jobs in the middle of the day to just be with their friends who had gone through this, which so grateful for, because I don't know what we would have done without our friends showing up for us in that moment.
I can't imagine how bizarre it must have felt to walk off campus and walk to your house after you had just been through that. It must have been surreal doesn't even begin to capture it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we were encouraged to leave. Like, the police said, if you found your child, please, if you could leave the area so we have less confusion, less people. And there were two different areas that kids were gathering. And so, yeah, it was just, and there's a lot of people that live in the neighborhood. So it was people finding out this news at different increments of time and then either running. And, you know, you've seen the infamous picture of the mom running with her shoes in her hand and, you know, just trying to find where to park or trying to figure out where to go. And like a lot of confusion of where, like, okay, where are these kids? Where are these kids? And
yeah, and there was different communication sent out. Like, the kids are gathering at this other church. And then there was, well, now the kids are going back to the school.
Kids are in the gym and kids are here.
Scare. They thought there was bombs. And so then it wasn't at the school anymore. And then it was back at school. So a bunch of conflicting information was being sent out really quickly to parents. And it was an absolute mess, as you can imagine. But I guess one thing to note about the police were incredible. The first responders, I mean,
they were there so fast.
Yeah. And every story.
Yeah. Sorry,
go ahead, Lou.
No, you can go ahead.
Every story we've heard about them has been so, I guess, reassuring of my faith in humanity. You know, one of the things that was going through Laura's mind, she told me after, was that she ran into the school because she was scared about what happened in Uvalde and, you know, the police setting up a perimeter and trying to mm-hmm. figure out what to do while the shooter was in there killing kids. And the officers that were there on the scene rushed in. And the first officer that was there, I understand, just had his sidearm, no body armor, just ready to do whatever needed to be done. And I think that was true about a lot of the adults who were there. They were
everybody was everything they what are we doing?
Stop what was happening immediately and willing to give up their own lives to save as many of those kids as they could.
Incredible courage, including especially you, Laura, knowing what you needed to do, 8 months pregnant, running to the school to find mm-hmm. your son, to take charge. You so single-mindedly knew what you had to do. And I am just in awe of both of you. Thank you for sharing that morning with us. We're going to take another break here, but when we come back, we'll take on the hard questions. We'll talk a little bit about why this happened and how we can prevent school shootings in the future. We're talking with Lauren Patrick, parents of an Annunciation Catholic school student and survivors of the recent school shooting. This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show.
From Denmark to De Pere, this is 97.9 WGBW.
as Wisconsin is cheering on Bucky Badger. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Democratic congressional leaders say that President Trump's agreed to meet tomorrow ahead of government funding that runs out Tuesday night. The House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries tells ABC's This Week.
We want to find bipartisan common ground to find a spending agreement that avoids a government shutdown and actually meets the needs of the American people.
State and local officials in Portland, Oregon say there's no public safety threat that necessitates deploying soldiers to the city. President Trump said he would send in troops to combat, quote, domestic terrorists. Flash flooding in Arizona responsible for at least three deaths in Globe, about 90 miles east of Phoenix, while the Carolinas are bracing for a possible tropical storm. Tropical depressions expected to strengthen into tropical storm Imelda today. In North Carolina, three people were killed, eight were hurt in a shooting at an outdoor waterfront bar. Authorities say somebody was firing from a boat into the restaurant. One person's been detained. This is ABC News.
The Packers on Sunday Night Football. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with Sports in Dallas, where the Packers are playing the Cowboys tonight. Green Bay began the season with convincing wins over the Lions and Commanders, but lost last week in Cleveland to a Browns team that hadn't won a game since last November. I spoke to Packers tight end Tucker Kraft about the start of their season so far.
You know, we did great week one, week two, coming out, trying to put points on the board. We just got to stick to that. It doesn't matter if we're home or away. We're going to come out on the first drive and try to get points on the board. That is just the demand of our offense. The defense needs us to play like that so we can play complementary to them. They hold the team to 13 points in the fourth quarter. It was 10-0 up until the fourth quarter. That's remarkable. Not a lot of defenses are doing that. We have the best defense in the NFL, so we have to help them out.
That's Packers tight end Tucker Kraft with Sports on Mike Clemens.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. The president has tons of critics in or out of the entertainment business, but none have been as harsh as Bruce Springsteen. The boss has written about blue-collar America for most of his career and professed his love for his country in a recent interview with Time magazine. Springsteen hit the president pretty hard during his tour last spring. The boss does not seem intimidated, even though the president has him by 3 years, about 150 pounds, and is beating him in bankruptcies, 6-0. Not to mention he is also leading when it comes to telling someone not to certify election results. Be that as it may, the boss has a lot more kick-butt tunes. All the president could come up with in response to Springsteen's harsh criticism was, "He's dumb as a rock." This from the guy who can't pronounce acetaminophen. In the interview with Time, Springsteen probably realized he couldn't match wits and just said he couldn't care less what the president thinks. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
As Wisconsin as a fish fry on a Friday night, this is the Civic Media Radio Network.
I'm meteorologist Rodney Price. A delightful Sunday afternoon shaping up. Sunshine, mid-70s, and a light southwest wind. Tonight, nice and cool with clear skies, lows in the upper 40s. Temperatures starting to warm up a little bit more going into Monday. Sunshine and lower 80s. It's 53 at our studios.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
You know, I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Not completing high school is more of a social thing than it was an academic thing. Even though all these years have passed, I still had that longing to have my diploma.
At age 30, Carissa finished her high school diploma.
If you're even considering getting your high school diploma, you can do it.
No one gets a diploma alone. If you're thinking of finishing your high school diploma, you have help. Find free adult education classes near you at finishyourdiploma.org. That's finishyourdiploma.org. Brought to you by the Dollar General Literacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
Todd Alba.
She's a broadcasting legend in Wisconsin, and we're lucky enough to have her here at Civic Media. We start our new segment. Jane Matnair joins us for Matnair Mondays. Next time, join us.
The Todd Alba Show, weekdays 2 to 4.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I'm Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Laura and Patrick. They are parents of a three-year-old boy who attends Annunciation Catholic School in Minneapolis, where a school shooting took the lives of two students back in August and injured 18 others. If you missed the beginning of our conversation, you can always find it at civicmedia.us and wherever you get your podcasts. So back to the conversation, Laura and Patrick, you shared your story. It's harrowing. As a parent, I can't even imagine what that morning was like. But a few weeks have passed. You've had some time to process. Where are you at now? Patrick, I know you've got a lot of strong feelings about this.
Yeah, I am frustrated. The tears are gone, and now I'm hungry for change to prevent these types of situations from happening to other parents, to other kids. At the end of the day, I think this is a societal failure. I think a lot of people feel that way, but I think a lot of people struggle with where to put their emotional energy. And kind of who to blame to make them feel better about it, that it's not them, and that they're advocating for whatever's right. Because I think at the end of the day, nobody wants there to be school shootings. But it's a reality that all parents live with in America. Mm-hmm. I don't know a single parent that doesn't drop their kid off and think about what if this is the last time I say goodbye and in the drop off line.
Yeah. What is it like to drop your son off these days?
There's good days and bad days. Mm-hmm. And a lot are good days, but, he talks a lot about monsters in his preschool. Mm-hmm. I don't think he really understands what a school shooter is. I don't think he gets that, what's happened to him has been highly politicized on a national level. Mm-hmm. But he's scared of going to school sometimes, and sometimes he's not. Sometimes he's happy to see his teacher and play with his friends. But we talk about it on the way to preschool.
Yeah.
And it's complicated because he was one of the very few students who were not in the church. So he was like a group. It was the three-year-olds in two kindergarten classrooms. So no more than like 40, 45 kids who were in the school, and the rest of the children and all of the staff and all of the teachers and parishioners and parents were all in the church. So our experience and this other group of people's experience, though I do have this like harrowing story, we're having very different experiences because we have a three-year-old who doesn't really get it, who didn't see anything. He, I think, legitimately thinks there's a monster mm-hmm. that came to his preschool.
He's three.
He's like picturing Monsters, Inc. monsters. And having those sort of imaginative fears. And it's kind of complicated. And thankfully, the aftermath, you ask about the aftermath. And the aftermath has been remarkable and humbling inundation of resources and community and people desperate to help and to be present in our lives and in Annunciation's lives. And it's like, again, it's like a teeny tiny community in like respect to, you know, bigger public schools. There's less than 400 kids. So, and it's preschool through eighth grade. So it's really small groups of kids. So I think like we, as his parents are figuring out, navigating all the semantics of like, okay, well, this was our story, and this was, and also the experience of living still like right next door to it, being at like ground zero, if you will. But I think, yeah.
Well, and this is a permanent part of your story, obviously, mm-hmm. but the rest of the country has kind of moved on.
Yeah, some things have happened in recent weeks that have, and that was something that was very honestly tough to handle even in the first like week or two, is like just acknowledging how desensitized we as a country are to this happening, mm-hmm. and like how far it's always felt from people. And we were like honestly witnessing that within our own community, of like people coming to the realization of how close it is to them in different like timelines. Like people, like there were some people, like my sister, for example, who like it hit her immediately, and the like depth of it hitting close to home was something that she could feel and experience so fast. That was her nephew, right? And then there's other people who are like farther away, who are like, yeah, like just watching even the like groups of our friends and groups of our family process through it, and then watching, you know, the greater community or like people, the news cycle essentially move on within days, was like really hard. And like even today, this little community has not remotely moved on. Like we are, especially the kids who were in there, especially the kids who saw the worst, like they are still in the depths of trauma, and these teachers and these, you know, this principal and the priest, like they're all still so in it, and we're getting distracted by 100 other horrible things.
More distracted by more gun violence.
Yeah, out. Distracted by more gun violence and the like arguing of how to solve it. And yeah.
Patrick, how do you take this? I know this makes you really angry. Mm-hmm. How do you take this and turn it into something that you can use so you can direct that energy into a positive place?
Yeah. I've been trying desperately to get involved legislatively. So I've met with politicians and aides, having those conversations about how I can be helpful, whether that's testifying as part of a special session or sharing my story otherwise. That's what I've been channeling my energy into, and you know, having this conversation with you, I think, is also an important part of it, to tell our story, have people feel just an ounce of the feelings associated with it that we felt, and hope to change the narrative around what responsible gun ownership can look like in America. And what would need to change in order to prevent something like this from happening again, understanding we live in an incredibly complex political climate, especially with respect to guns.
We sure do. Hey, and one thing that I notice every time this happens, and it happens over and over and over again in this country, and we hear thoughts and prayers, and then we move on. What does it feel like when you hear these shallow messages from people, and it is just the thoughts and prayers, and they're just distracted and moving to the next thing?
Yeah. I think the principal said it best. Immediately after the shooting happened, he referenced an African proverb describing thoughts and prayers, but also moving your feet. And I think thoughts and prayers without action is hollow. In order to effectuate change, we need to do something about it. There isn't a prayer without action that could solve this crisis that we're facing, where guns are the leading cause of death of kids. in our country.
Yeah. Well, I mean, let's talk about the things that we can do, because we hear politicians pointing fingers at each other. From the right, they're saying this is a mental health problem. From the left, they're saying it's the guns. A lot of people are talking about the societal issues. I think that was the first thing that you mentioned, Patrick. Where is that sweet spot? What can we advocate for as concerned citizens who are just trying to do the best thing for our kids?
Yeah. We could talk about mental health. That's probably not what I'm going to focus on. Because, you know, although there's mental health crises everywhere in the world, America's really the only place that has regular school shootings. And so the X factor, if you will, that America has is access to guns. You can go to Walmart and you can buy an AR-15. And
very quickly.
They're affordable. You can pick it up quickly.
It's not hard.
And that happened in this case. These guns were legally obtained and quickly obtained.
They were legally obtained the weekend before at a gun store in a half hour.
Yeah. And so that access to guns piece, I think, is the biggest thing. And I grew up in a conservative household. I grew up hunting with my dad. I took, you know, gun safety training. We belonged to a sportsman club. We used to shoot trap on the weekends. And so I grew up around guns and in gun culture and feel a certain, I guess, reverence for guns. I respect guns immensely. And I also respect life immensely. And I think the only way that we can both satisfy the right and the left as part of this is to figure out a way to instill that reverence in firearms to everybody. And that looks like responsible gun ownership. It looks like locking your firearms, not storing them loaded where kids can have access to them, and making it more difficult to buy guns. You shouldn't be able to quickly purchase a gun. It shouldn't be cheap. And you know,
so the type of guns that you can purchase.
We could talk about type of guns. I think we start losing people when we start talking about specific types of guns that need to be regulated, because I think, as most gun enthusiasts are aware, an AR-15 semi-automatic and other types of hunting rifles that are semi-automatic can do very similar amounts of damage. At the end of the day, I think we need to slow down the process to purchasing a gun, require people to do more things in order to obtain a gun, whether that looks like licensure or requiring people to get some sort of certification. I'm not sure exactly what that looks like, but I think we need to slow the process down.
Hey, and there are so many avenues to go this route in the policy world. And we'll talk a little bit more about that after this short break. And we're also going to talk about what you've learned and your hope for the future. So we're talking with Laura and Patrick, parents of a 3-year-old who attends Annunciation Catholic School, and they are survivors of the recent school shooting. You're listening to the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show on WGBW, WISS, the Civic Media app, and wherever you get your podcasts.
As a U.S. Navy veteran and business owner, I've lived through moments where every detail counts, and I carry that into mass appeal. That's why I personally ensure we deliver top quality promotional materials like t-shirts, sweatshirts, and more to help your company, whether it is a local business or school, gain the visibility it needs to thrive. Your logo is our business, and we're here to make your vision come true.
Go to massappealwi.com or drop by their shop on Lineville Road, just off Highway 41.
At Hazelden Betty Ford, treating mental health isn't just about breaking old patterns. It's about braving new ones. As the leader in alcohol and drug treatment for 75 years, we know caring for addiction, anxiety, depression, and trauma goes hand in hand. We're here for you with new tools when life breaks down. Discover your path to better mental health at HazeldenBettyFord.org/Wisconsin. Sponsored by Hazelden Betty Ford Foundation.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
You know what I'm a sucker for at a Chinese buffet?
Crab rangoons.
Yep. I'll have about four or five of those things.
And they have cocktail weenies, which is a nice delicacy at the Chinese buffet.
I'm trying to think of a buffet I went to that had cocktail weenies.
Who's eating that?
I don't know.
Even if you have a gourmet recipe at home, you're not making cocktail weenies. You're certainly not eating them when you go to the Chinese buffet.
Yeah.
Kind of weird.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabba. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Doctors Without Borders is delivering life-saving medical care where it's needed most in communities around the world. From bandaging war-wounded patients in Sudan to providing clean drinking water in Haiti, we're in more than 70 countries worldwide, bringing patients from sick to recovering, from emergency to aid, from crisis to care. This life-saving care is made possible by a global movement of supporters like you. Thank you.
Every 15 seconds, someone is diagnosed with cancer. If it's happened to you or someone you love, the American Cancer Society can help at every step of the journey. Visit cancer.org today.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. If you or someone you love is struggling, you are not alone. September is National Suicide Prevention Month. Call or text 988 anytime to connect with the Crisis Lifeline. A message from the Civic Media Radio Network.
Your local Civic Media radio station is your source for real news and great conversation, plus fun and exciting contests. For a complete list of contest rules, log on wgbw.fm/contest-terms.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is the Dr. Kristen Lierley Show. I am Dr. Kristen Lierley, and I'm here with Laura and Patrick, the parents of a three-year-old son who attends Annunciation Catholic School, where a school shooting recently took the lives of two students and injured 18 others just a few weeks ago. Laura and Patrick, your story is one that many, many parents fear, especially with the lack of seriousness that some of our elected leaders display when it comes to school shootings. What would you want to say? Patrick, what are you going to say to lawmakers with all of this experience and knowledge? And as you continue forward to share this story and make the change that we need to see, what are you going to tell them?
Yeah, I think the synthesized version of it is do something. I think we have a group of politicians on the left that are very willing to ban guns overnight. And then we have a group of politicians on the right who are not willing to ban guns at all, and are more interested in talking about mental health. I think the part that frustrates me the most with the latter argument is they're also advocating for actively defunding our healthcare. And so I think I struggle with that because you can't have it both ways, where you're saying it's not the guns, it's the healthcare, but we're not going to do anything, and we're actually going to take resources away from mental health services for our society. And so I would say to lawmakers, do something to move this forward, because there is something to be done, whether that's in the mental health space, whether that's in regulating guns, or in enshrining responsible gun ownership in our laws. Those are things that can be done, and I think probably have wide support, that aren't mass infringes on our Second Amendment rights, that can also make our schools safer, our communities safer, our society safer. Because at the end of the day, this is really just about our kids. These are our kids. The most important thing in the entire world. If you're a parent, you know it. I would do anything for my kids. And it baffles me that this view comes up again and again and nothing is done.
Yeah. And you said you can't have it both ways, but somehow they do. And that's the thing that baffles me the most. Hey, Laura, what would you say? You are talking to your lawmakers face to face. What is the message you want them to hear?
You know, what I would say to everyone, and especially to them, is this is not far from you. This is, as much as you feel like this isn't close to home, I said that my whole life. I said, there's no way this possibly could happen to me. I'm sending my kid to this teeny tiny little Catholic school next to my house. He's just going to preschool. What in the world are the chances that that would happen there? And the reality is that this is not far from you. This is close to you. This could happen to anyone, unfortunately, because again, how easy it is to get access, and how quick you can get access to very, very high powered guns. And I think that's what I would stress. Like, I experienced that thought in my head. This is happening to me. This is happening to my community. This is happening to my neighbors. This is happening to my child. And this is something that could happen to literally every single one of us if we don't do something. And it's been happening, and it's the regularity only grows, and the violence and the gun deaths of children only grows. So like, what are we just going to sacrifice the lives of our children forever and ever? Just for what?
So what gives you hope that we can actually make progress on preventing school violence? This has been going on forever. How can we fix it?
Minnesota gives me hope. you know,
me too. Yeah.
I feel really, I mean, it's really, you know, nice to live in a state that feels like maybe does have a chance of making change at a state level. Because obviously folks on the left are more interested in the conversation of, you know, adjusting gun laws. And we have it's a very progressive state. It's a very left-leaning state. Not everywhere, obviously, but I'm hopeful in our politicians. I'm hopeful. I'm glad that Tim Walz is running again. And that there are a lot of people who are like, we are not going to forget what happened at Annunciation, and we are going to keep talking about it despite the distractions, despite the loudness of all the other things that are happening.
That gives me hope.
Gives me hope.
Patrick, what gives you hope?
I don't mean to be contrarian, but I don't have a ton of hope. I think that this is going to happen again, and whether it's in Minnesota or in another state. And I'm sorry in advance to the parents that have to go through this again and again, that we couldn't do enough after this one, in advance, because I don't think we're going to solve this problem without meaningful change.
But we are going to do what we can, and you're doing it tonight. Laura and Patrick, I'm so profoundly grateful to you both for spending this little bit of time with me and for everything that you've gone through. Just so much respect. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Of course. All right, friends, this is the Dr. Kristen Lyerly Show. You can find us here and all of the socials. Send me your ideas for topics, guests, music, whatever you want to hear, and we'll see you next time.
If it happens in Wisconsin, you'll hear about it.
Local news and timeless hits, WGBW, Denmark Green Bay. ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Government funding is set to run out Tuesday night. Democratic leaders in Congress say President Trump has agreed to meet tomorrow, as House Majority Leader Steve Scalise tells ABC's This Week that it's up to Democrats to prevent a shutdown.
Let's let those talks continue till November with this short-term government funding bill that's in the Senate. But it's the same levels of funding that the Senate voted for, Democrats included, back in March.
Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries says Democrats are looking for a deal that meets the needs of the American people. Also at the White House Monday, the president will host Israel's prime minister. And on social media, he says there is something special on the horizon for all in the Middle East. Benjamin Netanyahu's office told ABC it's aware of the White House peace proposal, but that nothing will be done against Israel's will. Preparations continuing in the Carolinas ahead of a potential tropical storm that could bring rain and flooding to the region. This is ABC News.